This is the 3rd of July, 1994, and this is the second tape in the sequence when we are discussing the subject of insanity, IPs, etc. This tape is a direct continuation of its predecessor, and should always be accompanied by its predecessor, for obvious reasons. We have discovered the IP set of x bracket 1 minus x end of bracket plus y bracket 1 minus y end of bracket equals 1. And it is necessary at this stage to discuss the qualities and nature of this IP set. And I hope to be able to answer all possible conceivable questions on the subject of the nature of this IP set in what follows. The first question we must take up is the one that's hanging fire from the last tape, and that is the question of whether a person who is stuck in the x bracket 1 minus x IP can move across to the y bracket 1 minus y IP. And I said that he cannot do this, and we now have to find out why this is so. When working with IPs in logical analysis, it's a very useful ruse de guerre to simply substitute in place of the little IP another symbol. For example, if we, instead of our IP set that we've got there, if we replace it with the set of A plus B equals 1, where A equals the IP x bracket 1 minus x end of bracket, and B equals y bracket 1 minus y end of bracket. So we're now using a substitution set. Now the interesting thing is that when we use this substitution, of course, we've now left the insanity classes and we're back into reason again, because this A plus B equals 1 set can be manipulated in logic in terms of reason again. So we're back on the main road, and it saves wear and tear on the mind, and it saves wear and tear on the fingers writing out all these little X's and not X's all the time. So it's quite legitimate to do this. So the question arises that we've got this we have this as an A plus B equals 1. Well, we know from the when I mentioned the subject of interpreting A plus B equals 1 in logic, remember I said that we have to find out whether it's the inclusive or exclusive or, that the A plus B equals 1, the A and the B are quite disjunctive, they're quite separate from each other, and we just want to find out how much separation there is. You see the problem is that you can write A plus B equals 1, and it could either mean that the class AB plus the class of A and not B and the class of B and not A equals 1, or it might simply mean that the class of A and not B plus the class of B and not A equals 1. Now both of those can be expressed as A plus B equals 1. You see the problem. One is the inclusive or, and the other is the exclusive or. One includes the class, includes the possibility of both A and B, as a common class, and the other one excludes the possibility of both A and B as a common class. So our problem here boils down with these IPs, and to answer this question, why can't the person move from one class to one IP to the other, is to find out, can this common class of both IPs exist? Well, let's put it together. The AB class becomes, in terms of the IPs, both IPs. It becomes the IPs, it becomes x bracket 1 minus x, y bracket 1 minus y equals 1. That becomes that class. It's a separate class, so we must make it equal to 1. And we immediately, when we look at this class, we immediately see that if that is so, then x equals y, and 1 minus x equals 1 minus y. But that can't hold, because the person, remember, the games player, in his descent down through into compulsive games player, has postulated that x is not equal to y. He has to make this postulate, otherwise he'll lose the whole set if he accidentally postulates that x equals y. You see that? So his old postulate of x is not equal to y is still running. So that prevents those two IPs, that class of two IPs, the common class of the two IPs, from existing. So that class is equal to zero. And then the set now reduces down in terms of the scope of the AB set, because it's easy to express, it now becomes I bracket 1 minus B end of bracket plus B bracket 1 minus A end of bracket equals 1. It's the exclusive OR. So the person is either in the IIP, in one of the IPs and not in the other IP, or is in the other IP and not in the first IP. Now that is a simple double bind. In other words, it's a simple double bind. I refer you to the double bind technology. It's an exactly analogous to the example I gave in the double bind tech of the young man who couldn't get a job because he was inexperienced. Do you remember that double bind on the earlier tape? Well, this is an exactly similar thing. It's a straightforward double bind, and it locks the person in one, in the IP that he was in when he went into the IP state. In our example, the person, remember, his last game was X, his last game postulate was X, so he goes into the X bracket 1 minus x IP, and the other IP, although is in the set still, it's not available to him. It's over that way, and he can't get to it because he's locked out by the mechanism of the double bind. So that answers that question. If you follow this through, you'll see the reasoning behind that. Before we proceed any further, we ought to name this baby that we have our hands on. We've got this baby called, we've got two IPs, and we've got with a plus sign in between them, and they're equal to one. Well, we ought to name this. Well, we do have a name for it in Tron. We call it a twin IP. And the initial is T-I-P. Letters T-I-P. It means twin IPs. Twin IPs. And its initials is TIP, usually with the S because it's plural. They're twin IPs, TIPS. So henceforth, when I refer to twin IPs, what I mean, in the general case, I mean the IPs X bracket 1 minus X end of bracket plus y bracket 1 minus y end of bracket equals 1. That's what I'm referring to when I'm talking about the twin IPs. Now, we're in the fortunate position in Tron of being able to define these IPs, these TIPs, this state of twin IPs. We're able to define it. And which virtually means that we can define the IP state. It has four characteristics to the IP state which do define it. And if a person manifests these four characteristics, then he's in the IP state. And if he's in the IP state, he will manifest these four characteristics. So it's a definition of the IP state that I'm going to give you now, and it's something you should know if you want to understand this upper level tech in Tron. You should understand this these characteristics, this definition of the IP state. Now, the first of the characteristics of the IP is identification. In the IP state, a postulate is identified with its negative. A postulate is identified with its negative. So that is the first of the characteristics. It's quite self-explanatory, and it's quite obvious. It comes, and you can see it in terms of the symbolism, and you can see how it's come apart. So I don't really have to say any more about that at this stage. Now, the next characteristic of the IP is motionlessness. Motionlessness, that is, lack of motion. Now, let's discuss this briefly. Quite clearly, if a person is operating upon a postulate and it's negative, he's in a state of motionlessness. For example, if a person is both striving to go to China and striving to not go to China, he isn't going any place. He is in a state of absolute stillness. He isn't moving. Now, why is he in a state of stillness? Well, the two postulates there, the two postulates there are simply contradicting each other. One is the exact contradiction of the other, and so they stop each other. They simply stop each other, bang, right there, bang. Get it? So there's no motion in the IP state. There's no motion. It's a state of motionlessness. It's a stop motion. It's a point of stop motion. There's no motion in the IP state. If you don't believe this, you should get the idea of trying to go to China and trying to not go to China simultaneously, and you will quickly realize that while you're holding these two postulates, you aren't going any place. It's not that you can hold those two postulates and while holding the postulate to go to China and hold the postulate to not go to China, you can then go to South Africa. No, you can't do that. While you're holding the postulate to go to China and the postulate to not go to China, you can't go to South Africa. Why not? Because it contradicts the postulate to go to China. Get it? So that is the second of the characteristics of the IP is motionlessness, no motion, complete lack of motion. Now the third characteristic of the IP is timelessness. Timelessness, or if you prefer, I'll call it, there's another name for it, we also call it a time stop, but essentially it's a state of timelessness. Actually, this stems from the motionlessness, but this is the way it works out, that every postulate has a time component to it. Time is required in order to put a postulate into action. So that the being in the universe, when he's playing games with the postulates, he's always creating a little time, even if he's doing it automatically and unknowingly. He's always endeavouring to create a little time in which to fulfil his postulates. So he keeps doing this continuously, and hence the whole universe jogs along through time. You see that? So there's a time component to every postulate. And it is without this time component, without the postulates, I should say, there could be no time component. The time component vanishes. When the postulates vanish, the time component vanishes, because the time is bound in to the universe. It's a universe. The time is built into the postulate structure of the universe. As I said many times, this universe only consists of life and postulates, but the postulates need time in order to in order to fulfill themselves. So if you're in a state where there's no postulates, then there's no time. It does follow there. But we know that the IP state is a state of no postulate. Remember that if x bracket 1 minus x end of bracket equals 1, then x plus 1 minus x, sorry, x plus bracket 1 minus x end of bracket equals 0. Both the x and the 1 minus x are 0. So in the IP state, there's no postulate. And therefore, there is no time. There's no time in the IP state. It's a timelessness. Actually, it's more of a time stop. What happens is that the game goes right the way, time jogs along, right the way up to the point where the postulates went into IP, and they stop at that precise instant. It's a time stop rather than a time, but timelessness. But we refer to it as timelessness, the IP state. But the onset of the IP state is the time stop. That's where time stops. And this is quite well known in the field of psychiatry, that a person will actually go insane at a certain moment in time. And sometimes they may stay insane for 6 months or a year, and maybe they get some treatment, or maybe for any number of reasons, and suddenly one day the person snaps out of it and look around and say, where am I? And they say, well, you're in this institution. And he says, well, what date is it? And he's got a whole year missing out of his life, and time stopped for him, you see, at the point where the IP, where he went into the IP state a year previously. Now he's come back out of the IP state, and he's now back into sanity again. This is so common, this is, in psychiatry. It's documented. If you read up books of psychiatry and the treating of the insane and so forth, it's very, very common. So it's so common that it's not at all unusual that this will happen, and that people have memory lapses. That they come back out, they go into insanity, and for a period of time they have no memory of the period inside the insanity while they're sane. They come out of it and they've lost a period of their life. The doctor says to him, well, can you remember being in here for a year? And he says, no, the last thing I remember was receiving that telephone call from Uncle Ben. And after that there's nothing. I don't recall anything. Oh yes, says the doctor, he understands. Yes, yes, well, you've had a nervous breakdown. He's been insane. He's been in the IP state, and now he's snapped out of it. So there's a time stop there. In the IP state, time stop. Now, I don't have to remind listeners to this tape, who have studied the subjects of Dianetics and Scientology and being stuck, and they know all about this subject of stuck on the time track. I would refer you to the connection between this material that I'm talking about now, the IPs and the stuck in time, and the fact that a person can be stuck on the time track. So I just point it out at this juncture that there is a connection between being stuck on the time track and the IP state. You could be stuck on the time track for other reasons than IPs, but sure as hell, if you went into an IP state, you'll be stuck there. That's where your attention will be stuck. It will stick your attention because there's no time in the IP state. If a person went into the IP state and then came out again, there will be a little time stop there which would hold his attention at that point in time. We'll discuss this a little more when we're talking about sensations. But at this juncture, I'll just remind you that the phenomena does exist, and to relate it, this subject of time stop and timelessness of the IP, to relate it to what you know of being stuck on the time track and the engram bank. Just relate this phenomena. Now, the fourth phenomena that's associated with the IP state, the not associated, but it characterizes the IP state, is the phenomena of mass. M-A-S-S, mass. Now, I won't go in and talk about this anymore, because I'll be discussing it much more fully when we talk about sensations and the anatomy of sensations later on. So at this stage, just bear it in mind, it's the full characteristic of the IP is mass. So there we have the four characteristics of the IP. The identification between a postulate and its negative, the subject of motionlessness, timelessness, and mass. They are the four characteristics, and they do define the IP state. They are necessary and sufficient to define the IP state. By that I mean that there might be other characteristics, there may be many other characteristics of the IP state, but those four are necessary and sufficient to define it. Right, now, questions. Various questions going to arise from the last section of the preceding tape. We now have a person in the twin IPs, x bracket 1 minus x end of bracket, and there's the other IP of y bracket 1 minus y end of bracket. He's got these twin IPs, and these are equal to 1. The person's either in one or the other, but they're stuck in the x one, the x IP. And the immediate question comes to mind, that a person's going to say, well, wait a minute, Dennis, hold your horses. Didn't you say that y equals naught? Isn't that a part of the compulsive games play that the person went into, that when he reduced his goals package, his postulate set, down to a one game class, he postulated that y equals naught? And he postulated that 1 minus x equals 0. And now you've got these appearing, y reappearing in one IP, and we've now got 1 and 1 minus x reappearing in the other IP. How do you account for that, Dennis? Well, very, very simply, I draw your attention to the fact that in the IP state, that when x bracket 1 minus x end of bracket equals 1, then x plus bracket 1 minus x end of bracket equals 0. So in the IP state, all x 1 minus x y and 1 minus y are all equal to 0. There's nothing there in terms of reason. You're looking at a different state, you see. You've moved from the state of rationality into a state of irrationality. Get it? I know it's peculiar, and you say, well, if none of these postulates exist, then how come we're equating them to one? Well, by convention, we're saying that these exist in the insanity state. You see that? We're having to utilize our logic, you see, otherwise we can't use the logic. But you must bear in mind that in the IP state, all the postulates in the IP state are equal to 0. It's a direct deduction from the fact that it's in an IP state. The IP state is impossible in terms of reason, you see. It's quite impossible. Therefore, the postulates don't exist, obviously. So that answers that question of how come the person can be in the IP x bracket 1 minus x end of bracket when he'd already previously postulated that 1 minus x equals 0. Well, when he goes into that IP, he postulates x equals 0 too. The whole lot goes. He goes into the IP. So that answers that query. Now, a few brief words on the social aspect of what we're talking about here. When a so-called sane person meets an insane person, the first response the sane person has is to believe that the insane person is playing a game, is putting it on. And he's inclined to sort of slap him on the back and say, okay, that's very, very good. That's a good game. Okay, now snap out of it and talk to me. It takes him some little while to grasp that the insane person is not, he's not putting it on. It's not an act. He actually does think the way he is the way he is, and it's not a sham, it's not a front, it's not something he's putting on consciously and can put on and take off at will. He's stuck in it, and his logic, the strange logic of the insane, is something that the insane person is stuck with. And once the sane person, or the so-called sane person, the so-called sane person realizes this, he's abhorrent of insanity. He pulls away from it as if it's the plague. And it's no exaggeration to say that to study insanity, the study of insanity, is the most difficult of all studies that a person can undertake. Working with the insane burns out more psychiatrists than any other field of medical practice. The burnout rate amongst them is absolutely incredible amongst the people who work with the insane. It's a very, very trying occupation for a sane person to try and understand insanity, and this is largely because of ignorance of the state. Now, we in Tron, we are no longer in ignorance of the state of insanity. We do know its postulate structure. That when you see a person who is insane, that you know fundamentally that they've got one, a postulate. You don't know what the postulate is, but somewhere they have a postulate, and they're trying to operate on that postulate, and it's negative simultaneously. That is what they're trying to do, and that is why they're insane, and they are locked in this state. The alternative to being locked in this state is even worse than the state that they're in. You see that? Like the barber. He went insane, but the alternative to, like the Barber of Seville, he goes insane, but the alternative to going insane was even worse. He would be executed. And that was even more intolerable than the insanity. This is true for every insane person. There is an alternative, but it's always worse than the insanity. So they choose the insanity rather than the worse option. Now, this abhorrence of insanity is so intense amongst the so-called rational humans, so intense, this pulling away from insanity, that I expect people to have enormous difficulty understanding the material on this tape. Even people who've completed the first three levels of Tron are going to have some difficulty understanding it. I know this because I had difficulty in understanding it when I first discovered it. And so I make no bones about it. I found it an incredibly difficult subject to work in, to get the basics out. The rational mind simply abhors the IP state. It abhors insanity. It's the complete antithesis of rationality, you see. The rational mind works on the proposition that X bracket 1 minus x end of bracket equals naught. And the insane person is working on the proposition that x bracket 1 minus x end of bracket equals 1. And it's a complete contradiction. It couldn't be more contrary to the rational mind. It's the complete antithesis of the rational mind. And the rational mind abhors it and shuns away from it. So, I won't be surprised if anyone hearing this tape thinks that I've lost my marbles, that Dennis Stevens has finally gone mad with his Tron. That would be one extreme reaction to listening to this, listening to these tapes. And the other, the most moderate reaction would be that a person would have incredible difficulty understanding what the hell I'm talking about. Even those who are familiar with logical analysis and are familiar with Boolean algebra and don't have any problem with the symbolism. Unless they're well advanced in TROM, well advanced through the levels, they're going to have some difficulty grasping this material, simply because the mind abhors the subject of insanity. But this is so. You've only got to look at history, the history of the way we treat the insane. All down history, the minority class of humanity that has been treated the worst during the whole of history has always been the insane. No minority group has been treated like we've treated the insane. Even in this century, we've been hacking their brains out with ice picks and subjecting them to violent electric shocks, and all under the name of helping them. I mean, how on earth do you expect to help a person when you're subjecting them to violent electric shocks and hacking bits of their brains out? Gives you some idea of the abhorrence that the rational mind has of insanity, and the fact that the state is simply not understood. You think of the worst things that it's possible for a group of people to do to a minority. You think of the very worst that a majority group could do to a minority group, then you pick up a history book and read back through history, and you'll find that somewhere, sometime, a majority group have done this to the insane. No exceptions. They've done it. It's there on the track. It's all the horrors have been done to the insane. No minority group has been so badly treated by mankind as his insane brothers and sisters. So don't be surprised if you yourself listening to this material find it difficult to grasp, if you find yourself shuddering away from it, if your tendency to say is, well, yes, this is interesting, but Dennis is probably wrong, and so on. Well, I can assure you that Dennis isn't wrong. What I'm giving you is correct. It is correct. As I said right at the beginning of this material, that I discovered this stuff some years ago, and I put it on the back burner. Even I suspected. I thought, well, I just want to be absolutely certain of this before I mentioned it to anyone. But as more and more data piled up, it became more and more obvious that this is exactly right. This is exactly the way it is. And all I've done over the years is perfect the technology. A few years ago, I couldn't have presented it in such a coherent form as I can present it now. I've rounded it off in the few years, but essentially it hasn't changed. It's still the IP tech, still the IP technology, the upper tech of TROM. The subject of the IP is the subject of insanity, and also finally an understanding of the subject of sensation. In order to help people to understand the IP state, I will give you another postulate configuration, another way of looking, well, not another postulate configuration, but another way of looking at the subject of insanity, and another way of looking at compulsive games play as a more diagrammatic representation, which may make more sense, may help more people to grasp what I'm getting at. Now, first of all, I'd like to give the diagrammatic representation of the compulsive game state. Now, this is a state where we have we're still discussing the XY set. And the postulates that are holding are X is not equal to Y, and X equals 1 minus Y. Or more precisely, in terms of our symbolism, X equals bracket y minus y, end of bracket. Now that is the compulsive game state. Compulsive game. Now we can represent this as a matrix, diagrammatic, as a way of doing it diagrammatically, which may be of assistance to you instead of seeing it in terms of the logical symbols. Some people's minds do better with diagrams than they do with symbols. It's the difference between the geometer and the algebraist. The algebraist works best with symbols, and the geometer works best with pictorial representations. So here we go. Let's see if we can express this compulsive game state diagrammatically. Let's imagine a square. Okay, now in our square, in the top left-hand corner of the square, we put the symbol X. In the bottom left-hand corner of the square, we put the symbol 1 minus y. In the top right hand corner of the square, we put the symbol y, and in the bottom right hand corner of the square, we put the symbol 1 minus x. Okay? And then we've got our square with four corners, and there's a symbol in each corner. Then between the top left hand corner symbol, the X, and the bottom left hand corner symbol, we put the sign, the bottom left hand corner, which is a 1 minus Y, we put an equal sign. So we have X equals 1 minus Y. Then between the bottom left hand corner symbol of 1 minus y and the bottom right hand corner symbol of 1 minus x, we put a not equal sign. Then between the bottom right hand corner symbol of 1 minus x and the top right hand corner symbol of y, we put an equal sign. Then between the top right hand corner symbol of y and the top left hand corner symbol of x, we put a not equal sign. Now if you look at that and examine it, you'll see that it virtually saying that x is not equal to y, 1 minus x is not equal to 1 minus y, y is equal to not x, and x is equal to not y, and that defines the compulsive game state. So there's that one. When you've got that written down, put that to one side. That's the diagrammatic representation of the compulsive game state. I'll now give you the diagrammatic representation of the IP state. Again, we have our square. Put up your square. And in the top left-hand corner, we have an X symbol. In the bottom left-hand corner, this time we have a 1 minus X symbol. And in the top right-hand corner, we have a Y symbol. And in the bottom right-hand corner, we have a 1 minus Y symbol. Now, working our way around from the top left-hand corner, between the top left-hand corner symbol of X and the bottom left-hand corner of 1 minus X, we put an equal sign. Then between the bottom left-hand corner of 1 minus X and the bottom right-hand corner of 1 minus Y, we put a not equal sign. Then between the bottom right-hand corner of 1 minus Y and the top right-hand corner of Y, we put an equal sign. Then between the top right hand corner of y and the top left hand corner of x, we put a not equal sign. And this defines our IP state. We have x is equal to 1 minus x, and y is equal to 1 minus y, and x is not equal to y, and not x is not equal to not y. And that is our IP state. Now when you examine those two squares carefully, and you'll notice that all that's happened, the only difference between the two, is that the bonding has changed. The X has changed its bonding. Instead of being bonded to 1 minus Y, X is now bonded to 1 minus X. And Y, instead of being bonded to 1 minus X, is now bonded to 1 minus Y. It's a change in the bondings or the identifications. More strictly speaking, the correct word I should have used would have been identifications, because it's a double bondings. But the double bondings have changed. And that's the only difference between those two squares. Now, if you can understand that and grasp that, you can see that immediately and get the very essence of the basic difference between compulsive games play and insanity. There's just that simple change of bonding. If you can grasp it, it will go click in your mind, and you've got it. You'll see it instantly. And all the mystery about insanity will vanish out of your mind. You'll see it clearly. Blazing. You'll see it, got it. There it is, you understand it. Just a simple flip of bonding from the compulsive game state to the IP state. And that's what happens to the unfortunate compulsive game player. He bonding flips. And he flips into the insanity bonding. Then he's gone. He's gone into insanity. Just to round off and complete your diagrams, under the diagram for the compulsive game state, we'll write the symbolism for it, which is X bracket 1 minus Y end of bracket plus Y bracket 1 minus X equals 1, with X not equal to Y and X equal to 1 minus Y. Right, now under the diagrammatic representation, the square for the IP state, we'll write in the symbolism for that, which is X bracket 1 minus X end of bracket plus Y bracket 1 minus Y end of bracket equals 1, with X not equal to Y and X equal to 1 minus X and Y equal to 1 minus Y. And lest you forget it, X bracket 1 minus X end of bracket equals 1 minus Y bracket 1 minus Y end of bracket. That final identification is just to remind you that there's a double bind there. Now, on a previous supplementary lecture, I introduced the subject of the loop, and this is a very, very useful piece of information in this context of sanity and insanity, because it gives us the clearest difference between the subject of insanity and the subject of sanity. In other words, we can express sanity in terms of the loop, and we can express insanity in terms of a loop. And once you put them side by side and compare them, you immediately see the difference between sanity and insanity. Now let's give you first what we shall call the sanity loop. Now there's three parts to the loop, like any loop, and the first part is the postulate. And the postulate that goes with sanity is the postulate that a thing is itself. A thing is itself. And that is expressed by X equals X. Now, another way to express that postulate is to say that a thing cannot both exist and not exist simultaneously. And that is expressed by x bracket 1 minus x end of bracket equals naught. Now, another way to express that is to say that a thing either exists or it doesn't exist. And that is expressed by x plus bracket 1 minus x end of bracket equals 1. As we know, all three of those elements are identical to each other and are simply various methods of saying the same thing. If you were to think about this very, very carefully, very, very closely, and ponder it, and look at those three very, very carefully, it would begin to occur to you that they are exactly what they say they are, that they are different methods of saying exactly the same thing. Now, that so much for the sanity loop. Now, let's have a look at the insanity loop. First of all, the postulate. Now, the postulate in the insanity loop is a thing is its absence. And this is expressed by x equals bracket 1 minus x end of bracket. Another way to say this is to say that a thing both exists and doesn't exist simultaneously, and that is expressed by x bracket 1 minus x end of bracket equals 1. Now, another way to say this is to say that neither a thing nor its absence exist, and this is expressed by x plus bracket 1 minus x end of bracket equals naught. Now, just as in the sanity loop, all the elements in the insanity loop are identical to each other. But there is one difference here. There's one difference between the two loops in this respect. The sanity loop, not only are all the elements in the loop identical to each other, but all of the elements in the sanity loop are true in this universe. Now, in the insanity loop, all the elements in the loop are identical to each other, but each of them are false in this universe. The sanity loop is the very essence of reason in this universe. The insanity loop is the very essence of unreason or insanity in this universe. Now, the rationale behind that last statement is a very simple one, that the sanity loop, the element x bracket 1 minus x end of bracket equals 0 is a valid deduction from the basic law upon which this universe is constructed. Therefore, that element is true in this universe. Therefore, the other two elements in the sanity loop are also true in this universe, because they are identical to the first element, and the identification is a true identification. The insanity loop, on the other hand, every element of this insanity loop is a complete contradiction of its partner in the sanity loop, and therefore is false in this universe. Even though the identification, the internal identification between the elements of the insanity loop is a true identification. Now, as I said earlier, if you duplicate exactly what I've just said on the subject of the difference between sanity and insanity, you will have the clearest possible understanding of the difference between these two subjects in this universe. Now, sooner or later, somebody's going to raise this question of and say, well, how can you be sure, Dennis, that the insanity postulate is x equals 1 minus x, and that the insanity postulate is not x is not equal to x? The answer to that question is very, very simple. The insanity state depends upon the postulate of x equals 1 minus x. They have to both be of the same intensity for the state to occur. And that can only happen when x equals 1 minus x. If we simply say that x is not equal to x, that isn't sufficient to give us that identification. The identification may be there, but it's not implied. But once we say x equals 1 minus x, we're definitely saying that the intensity of x is identical to the intensity of 1 minus x, and that is necessary for the insanity state. The insanity state does not occur unless a postulate and its absence, or a postulate and its negative, are both being held with exactly the same intensity. Now once that follows, once you have x equals 1 minus x, then the rest of the loop follows. Everything else in the loop follows. You get that? So, just in brief, the postulate x is not equal to x, it is insufficient to establish the insanity state in this universe. What it establishes, I don't quite know, but it certainly doesn't establish the insanity state in this universe. It's simply not a strong enough postulate to establish it. There is definitely an identification in this state, in the insanity state. The insanity state, like the compulsive game state, is a compulsive state. There is identification in the state. So it requires to be based upon a postulate which has an identification in it. And the postulate x is not equal to x contains no identification. So from that viewpoint, there's another angle from which you can understand that the postulate x is not equal to x is insufficient for our purposes here, because the insanity state, like the compulsive games condition which precedes it in life and from which it is derived, that the insanity condition is itself a compulsive condition and contains identifications, all of which happen to be false. Now, I think we've picked our way through the minefield here very, 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 very carefully, very, very precisely. I've replayed this material now, listened to it, and we've picked our way through the minefield. From this point onwards, it gets easier. If you followed it up to this point, then you're over the hump. If you can understand it up to this point, you've got the subject of insanity understood, and the whole subject of the IP and twin IPs and so forth is within your grasp, and the rest of this material is easy. We're over the hump, in other words. Now, it's necessary from this point to be very clear what we mean when we talk about insanity in relationship to a person in therapy. We've got to now talk about some aspects of human case conditions. There is such a thing as a brain-damaged person. Now, this is a medical fact, that people can develop brain damage which can affect their behaviour. Some people can be born brain damaged, and their behavior will be affected by this brain damage for the remainder of their life. There is such a thing as a brain damaged person. Now, some types of brain damage produce in the individual manifestations and characteristics which appear to be identical to insanity. And for all we know, that the individual, the spirit manifesting, there may also be insane. You see, we've got the spirit and we've got the body. We can have a rational spirit trying to function through a brain-damaged body, and therefore giving the manifestation of being insane. Get it? Or we can have an insane spirit manifesting through an undamaged brain and giving all the manifestations of insanity. But we can also have this state of affairs, and it will be very, very rare indeed, of an insane spiritual being manifesting through a brain-damaged body and again manifesting insanity. Now all these three possibilities can occur. You get it? Oh, there's the fourth possibility, of course, of a rational spiritual being operating through an unbrain-damaged body. That would be the fourth possibility. That completes the whole set now. That would cover all the possibilities. Now, it must be clearly understood that when I'm talking about this subject of insanity, I'm only talking about the spiritual being and his postulates. I'm not talking about brain damage. This is a brain damage is a medical phenomena. If you wish to know about brain damage, you should go and consult a doctor, consult the medical textbooks, consult the literature on this subject, which is quite extensive. Medicine knows one hell of a lot about the symptoms of brain damage. We know an awful lot about it. But I give you this advisedly. Don't make the mistake of assuming that a brain damaged person is insane just because they manifest very peculiar behavior. The human spirit behind it may be insane or may not be insane, and you cannot prove that his state of sanity or insanity if he happens to possess a damaged brain. You simply won't be able to determine it by his behavior if he possesses a damaged brain. Now, do you understand that? On the other hand, our mental hospitals are full of individuals who, to use the vernacular, are as nutty as a fruitcake. And there is nothing wrong with their brains at all. You subject their brains to every test known to medical science, and their brain cannot be differentiated in any way from the brain of a sane and rational human being. There is nothing wrong with this person's brain that any medical detection can determine, yet the person is as nutty as a fruitcake. They are insane. Now, that is the sort of insanity that I'm talking about. That here we have a spiritual being who's insane. And that's the subject we're talking about. You see that? We're dealing with the human psyche. We're not dealing with the human brain. Unfortunately, diseases of the brain, or injuries to the brain, or malfunctions to the brain, can produce behavior which superficially looks like insanity. Looks like insane behavior. So you see that this subject of brain damage, it muddies the water up, doesn't it? It muddies the water considerably. If you want to deal with the insane, the first thing you better find out, if you want to deal with a person that superficially gives the manifestations of insanity, you better go and have them thoroughly examined by a medical doctor and put them through all the tests known to medicine, x-rays of their brain and so forth, the whole works, to find out if they're suffering any brain damage. If this person is not suffering any brain damage whatsoever, then you will know for certain, for absolute certainty, that the procedures that we use, the best procedures we know to handle insanity in therapy, will benefit this person. We'll snap them out of the insanity. We know this for absolute certainty. But if this person who manifests insanity has all these tests done on them, and the tests determine and show quite clearly that this person is brain damaged, then you do not have this guarantee. You do not have this guarantee. The therapy will certainly improve the person, but we don't even know that we're dealing with an insane spiritual being. We may simply, there may be the case that we've got a rational, sane spiritual being trying to operate through a brain-damaged body, in which case our techniques we're running are inappropriate. You follow me? Bear in mind the four classes that I gave you. You've got a sane being operating an unbrain-damaged body. You've got a sane being operating a brain-damaged body. Or you've got an insane being operating a non-brain-damaged body. Or it can be an insane being operating a brain-damaged body. Now, do you get the four classes? You see a person that's manifesting insanity. Well, the only thing you know for sure when you see an insane person, a person manifesting insane behavior, is that this person isn't the class of beings that is a rational being occupying a non-brain damaged body. He can't be that class, but he may be one of the other of the three classes. You don't know. You have to subject this person to medical tests to find out if they're brain damaged. And if it turns out they have no brain damage, then we know then for sure that the insanity must be to do with the human spirit and our technology, our therapy techniques for handling insanity. We will then be 100% certain that we're gonna win. But we don't have this guarantee. In any other circumstances, if this person is brain damaged, our therapy may or may not help the person. It probably will help him, but we have no guarantee. Simply because we don't know what the state of the... Well, we just don't know. We don't know about this variable called brain damage, you see. Now, what are the techniques that will best help the insane person? What are the techniques we use? Well, they are, as I gave in the write-up, they are the CCHs. They are CCH 1 to 4. The four CCHs as developed by Ron Hubbard back in the late 1950s, about circa 1957, 58, around about that period. He developed those four delightful little CCH procedures there. And as I mentioned in the write-up, any person who cannot pass level one, cannot pass the test in level one of TROM, requires to run the CCHs with a separate therapist. And they should run the CCHs with a separate therapist until such time as they can pass the test in level one. It's quite distinctive. It's quite distinctive. Once those CCHs have gone flat on them, they will pass the level one test, providing they're not brain damaged. Get that proviso. Providing they're not brain damaged. If the waters are muddied up, you've got a brain damage pre-clear. Well, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. All my speciality is the human spirit, the human mind, the human psyche. I'm not an expert on brain damage. So So you'll have to go and consult elsewhere to find out how to handle brain-damaged people. I'm not an expert in that field, so I can't help you. Now this tells you that from a common sense point of view, that if you've got some patients, I'm very clear there, that's manifesting a high degree of irrationality, of insanity, and has done so for some years, and you want to take this person on in therapy, well, for God's sake, get this person tested for brain damage before you do anything. Just find out what you're dealing with. If the tests say the person is brain damaged, well, know then where you stand. If the tests turn out that the person's not brain damaged, well, okay, that gives you some confidence that your CCHs and so forth are going to eventually get the person up to a point where they can pass level one of TROM, then they'll be able to run solo. You get it? But if the person is brain damaged, you don't have this assurance. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. You run CCHs on a brain damaged person? I don't know. I've got no data on it. Don't think they've got any data down at the Church of Scientology either. My best guess is that that the techniques would benefit a brain damaged person. But it certainly, I'd be very surprised if it did anything to cure their brain damage. If the CCHs cured their brain damage, I'd be very surprised to hear that. But nevertheless, it would no doubt benefit the person. It certainly wouldn't harm them. Benefit the person. But don't expect a brain damaged person to ever, this is the point really, this is the bottom line, don't really expect the brain damaged person to ever be able to get on to TROM solo. You know? Just don't expect it. Don't expect it. You may be able to help them with the CCHs. But it's doubtful if they would ever pass the level one test, to be able to get on to level two solo. They might, but I think you'd consider yourself very, very lucky if they did, or their brain damage would be very, very minor. But as I say, if you're dealing with a brain damage very clear, you're on your own, mate. You're on your own. It's not my speciality. I can only advise you, but I must tell you that I'm not an expert in that field. But I am an expert in the field of the human spirits, who are operating bodies which aren't brain damaged. I do know a lot about those. I can help you in that area, but I can't help you much in the area of brain damaged human beings. You should go and consult the medical specialist on that subject. They can tell you much more than I can. Well, why is it then that if the CCHs, let's consider a person that is, we have an insane spirit, or a person who needs the CCHs running, say, let's just say we have a person who can't pass the test at level one, either because the human spirit is insane, but this person has no brain damage. Let's take that case. That's an area we can talk about. What is it about these CCHs that would break insanity in the insane spirit and return the spirit back to a rational state? What is it about these CCHs? Well, the CCHs are saying to the person, come to present time. Come into the present time now, universe. Come into now. And they come into now. It keeps saying, come to present time, come to present time. It's quite safe here. It's quite safe to come into present time. Come into present time. And the person eventually get pulled in. They realize that this universe is safe to be in. And once they come into contact with this universe again, they come into contact with the basic law of this universe. And once they come back into contact with the basic law of this universe, they come back into contact with the rational loop again. And they snap out of the insanity and snap back into the sanity condition. Now, it's as simple as that. It's simply, you've got to say to them, come to present time. Come to present time. I mean, Ron Hubbard knew this all for many years before he developed the CCHs. Ron used to talk about this in early lectures in Scientology. I've heard him say this many, many times. He was right, too. He said that you could walk through an insane asylum, he said, and just say to all the patients, go to every patient one by one and say, come to present time. Just snap your fingers in front of their face to attract their attention and say, come to present time. He says, and some small percentage of those people will immediately regain their sanity and walk out of the asylum absolutely sane. Ron used to say that. Later we developed the CCH techniques. And all the CCH techniques did was they were a highly specialised and highly mechanical way of saying to the person, come to present time. They would get the person into present time. So that the person could now go back into agreement, the insane person could go back and come now back into agreement with the postulates of this universe. And once they come back into agreement with the bosses of this universe, the insanity is broken. Because this universe, rationality, is a deduction from basic postulates upon which this universe is constructed, you see. They go back into what is reasonable in this universe, so their insanity breaks. Because their insanity is unreasonable compared to this universe. You get it? That's why the CCHs work when they work. There's nothing magical about those CCH processes. They're just a systematic and precise way of saying, come to present time, come to present time, come to present time. Quite safe here. Quite safe to go back into agreement with this physical universe. And the person eventually comes into present time, comes into agreement with the universe, ceases to go into the strange and weird logic of the insanity state and start to adopt the rationality of the universe. Starts to go into X equals X. Things are what they are. A thing cannot both exist and not exist simultaneously. And a thing either exists or it doesn't exist. Starts to adopt this approach, which is rational, reasonable reason in this universe, starts to adopt that, and their insanity vanishes. Get it? Now, finally, on the subject of insanity, what sort of condition would we expect the person's case to be in when an insane person becomes sane in therapy by the use of the CCHs? What sort of case condition? Where would we expect to find them? Well, we would expect to find them as a compulsive games player. You see, the cycle goes that the person goes from compulsive games play into insanity, which is in itself is a compulsive condition. So we give them therapy, we run the CCHs on them, and we snap them back into sanity again. Well, where are they going to be? Where are they going to pick up life where it left off? They're going to pick it up from the point where they went insane. But in other words, they're going to be a compulsive games player. So that's where you would expect to find them. You expect to find the person as a compulsive games player. So bear that in mind. It's a useful little thing to bear in mind. That when the insane regain their sanity, they go into compulsive games play. So, and as we know, the compulsive games player is at risk of going insane. You better not leave the person. You run the CCHs on this guy, and you've got him sane. You've got him up to compulsive games play. I can now quit. No, you can't. Because while he's a compulsive games player, he's at risk of going insane. He'll go back into the soup again in 6 months, a year, or 5 years. He'll go back into the soup again. He'll be back in the insanity state if you leave him as a compulsive games player. He's got to go further than that. He's got to be a non-compulsive games player. You've got to get him out of that. Take him out the risk area. Take him out the area of risk of compulsive games playing, take him up to a point where he's no longer at risk. In other words, he's got to complete the first three levels of TROM. You've got to proof him against insanity. Then it's safe for him to quit. He can quit at the top of level 3 of TROM. It's safe for anyone to quit therapy there. Quite safe. They can quit at that point. Because they're a non-compulsive games player, and they're not going to go insane at this point. So don't leave it. Don't turn a person sane in therapy and then leave him as a compulsive games player. That is a different flunk. It just simply isn't fair on the person. You fished him out of the soup, you've left him sort of standing on this rock, and then you go away and abandon him. Well, he's going to slide off the rock back into the soup again, isn't he? You know, he's going to fall off the rock back into the sea. You've got to fish him right out, get him onto dry land and dust him off and dry him off and get him all squared around so that he's no longer have any danger of falling back into that ocean again called insanity. That means turning him into a non-compulsive games player. And that means running the first three levels of TROM on him solo. He's got to run him solo. Could pick up levels 2 and 3 solo. Finish the job solo. Then he's proofed. Bear in mind, the person's not proofed against insanity if they run levels 1, 2 and 3 of TROM with a separate therapist. That doesn't proof them against insanity. Note, when I say they're proofed, when they run the first three levels of TROM solo, they complete to the top of level 3 solo. In other words, they follow through exactly as I've given it. Follow that? Good. Now, every person, as they run through level 5 of TROM, will start to become familiar with, first of all, curious about the subject of insanity, and then start to pick up the structure of insanity, and start to get the anatomy of it. Won't happen suddenly overnight. They'll start to become curious about it, and left to themselves, if they stay with level 5 long enough, they would get the whole anatomy out there and get the whole lot out all for themselves. Eventually they might discover in exactly the same words and exactly the same way that I put it together. Because they may not they might not be of a scientific bent, they may not be of a mathematical bent, they may not be able to use logic like I can, but they would certainly have the essence of it. They would understand what insanity is in terms of postulates, and if they come across what's on this tape, they would just listen to it. So yes, that's right. That's exactly the way it is. He's just expressed it a little differently than I would. Yeah, that's fine. But he's right, Dennis is, yes. So everyone who completes level 5, long before they complete level 5 of TROM, will have an understanding of the anatomy of insanity. It's one of those things that falls out the hamper. Peculiar, but there it is. It falls out the hamper, will fall out every time en route to the completion of level 5. All I've really done is to take the cognitions that I had in that area and formalized it and done a logical analysis of it and put it together in a form that is understandable and related it to the subject of reason and unreason and put the whole thing together in a logical construct, something which would be useful to scientists and mathematicians and so forth, and anyone who wants to do further investigations in this field. It's a valid reference point. So, although a person listening to this material on the subject of insanity might take it all with a grain of salt and say, well, yes, Dennis may be right, and so forth, I think you'll discover that when you get long before you get to the top of level 5 yourself, you'll be nodding your head in great agreement with me, saying, yes, that what Dennis said was right on the subject. He knew about insanity, and I'm finding it too. The things he said are quite right, and so on. In other words, everyone, before they get to the top of level 5, will have a familiarity, will have various cognitions of what sanity is and what insanity is, and they will understand that when I talk about IPs, I'm talking about insanity. They would understand insanity in not necessarily exactly in the form that I've got it. I've given it in this heavy stress on the logic of it. But they were certainly know its basics. They would discover that long before they got to the top of level 5. Okay, well, that's all I want to say on the subject of insanity. I see I'm coming up to the end of this tape now, and we will wind up this tape now, and the next tape will be on the subject of sensations. It's a continuation of this subject, but for convenience I will put it on a separate tape. It might be best if you put it on a separate tape.